Well, good afternoon, Eastern North Carolina. I am Roy Cooper, a son of Eastern North Carolina, and am glad to be back here today with so many friends, so many people who are working to lift Eastern North Carolina up. It is fantastic to be in New Bern. And I will tell you this, as I have going across the state weekly and sometimes two and three times a week as I go to counties that are still recovering from the hurricane, I know that New Bern and Craven County are open for business, and they want you to come. I also know that all of Eastern North Carolina is open for business. Yes, we have a lot to do. Yes, there are people who are still struggling to find an affordable place to live. There are small businesses that are still struggling to open. There are churches that still have not been able to meet and worship in the building that got flooded. But I know North Carolina, and I know the strong resilience of our people. And I see these local officials who are here today, mayors, county commissioners, city council member, boards of education, you're all working so hard to get your communities back up on their feet. And I'm grateful for your public service. I also wanted to First, let's let all the mayors that we have here to stand today, please, if you would. Thank you guys for coming. Can we have all of the members of city councils stand, please? Thank you all for coming. Members of our county commissions throughout Eastern North Carolina. Fantastic. Members of our boards of education throughout North Carolina who are here. Thank you so much for coming and being a part of this. We also have with us a number of legislators, and if I've forgotten somebody, if you can just, legislators are pretty good at if you're forgotten to let me know that you're here. But if you can just hand a note up and we'll recognize you afterward. But if you can hold your applause and we can have them stand, Representative Shelley Willingham, Representative Michael Special, Senator Norman Sanderson, Senator Rick Horner, Representative Kidwell, who is here, and Representative Galliard, who is here from Nash County. Thank you guys for being here and being part of this. And we also have three high sheriffs with us today. We have Calvin Woodard of Wilson, Ed McMahon of New Hanover, and Chip Hughes from Craven County. Let's give them all a hand. Today we're bringing state government to you. We have here almost all of the heads of the cabinet here in North Carolina. We are missing one who had to go to a funeral, and we have the deputy cabinet secretary here. But we wanted to come today to give you a report on things that we're doing. There are a lot of conversations that have already been held and are going to continue to be held with you. These cabinet members have gone out to various counties in Eastern North Carolina and done some volunteer work and have spent some time listening, as I have myself. I was in Pamlico County today and did some volunteer work here in New Bern. And we are grateful for the opportunity to be with you today. So what we're going to do is to first have an update from a couple of people who are going to talk about hurricane recovery in North Carolina. We know that that is a prime topic of discussion. It is the highest priority in my office right now to make sure that North Carolina recovers smarter and stronger. And we have want to recognize Mike Sprayberry, who is the head of our emergency management, to give us an update on hurricane recovery. Mike?
Yes, thank you, Governor, and thank you for allowing me to participate today. And I just want to share with everyone, I know personally that recovery is the number one priority. We meet, the governor's team meets every Monday with the governor to talk about recovery and the progress that we're making, and we keep him up to date about it every day. And thank you for allowing us to be here today. Before I get into a Florence recovery, just let me mention that a lot of people are asking me what is the government shutdown doing as far as recovery. As far as what we're doing with our FEMA programs, not so much, but what's happening is we have requested a federal disaster declaration for public assistance for Tropical Storm Michael for 21 counties, mostly in the central and western part of the state. That's on hold until the government comes back into session. As you know, also, we've been notified that we were going to receive $168 million for mitigation as a result of Matthew, and the governor's also asked for a substantial amount of funding from HUD for Florence. And until the governor comes back into session, we won't be getting any of that funding. So that is a holdup for us. Now, to talk about a little bit more about Florence, currently there's 139,640 people that have registered for individual assistance. Right now, SBA home loans, $326 million, $126 million for individual assistance that's been disbursed, $44 million in SBA loans, $8 million in economic injury disaster loans. Then we have $546 million paid out in National Flood Insurance Program. It's over $1 billion, and we're continuing to work hard to get the money out to disaster survivors and businesses. You may have heard about the STEP program. It's called Sheltering and Temporary Essential Power Program, that's used to put people back into safe, sanitary, and secure home. And so what happens is, before they get permanent repairs done to their home, we can go in there and put in some sheetrock, some appliances, and things like that. And what we've done is we've requested an extension for people to apply to that, and we received one, and so that extension goes through to February the 1st. If you know of anybody that would like to be a part of that, please get them to sign up. And then the deadline to complete all those repairs is now in April. The governor also has approved us to hire two people to help us run the State Disaster Recovery Task Force. This is extremely important to synchronize all the different recovery efforts. This won't just stop once we get through working on Florence recovery. We're going to continue to work through this in perpetuity, just to make sure that we're ready for any disasters that we have or are coming in the future. Right now, talking about the STEP program, we've actually got 1,724 people that have signed up for it. We're very excited about that. There's 12 counties that have that are part of that, Craven being one of them, and we're currently scheduling homes for those repairs right now. I will tell you that a big part of the operation has been direct federal housing with FEMA, so that they can place travel trailers basically right there on people's lots, so that they can live in those travel trailers while their homes are being repaired. They're also putting out mobile home units. And so what's happening is we have about 570 people that have those, either a travel trailer or a mobile home unit, and we anticipate probably a couple to 300 more. So that's moving pretty fast. So, again, those direct housing is the following counties: Robson, Columbus, Brunswick, New Hanover, Pender, Bladen, Duplin, Onslow, Jones, Craven, Pamlico, Carteret, and Lenore. So that's a big operation. We also have a number of folks in the Transitional Shelter and Assistance Program. And what that is for people that are waiting to find a housing solution, they can be placed in a hotel. And so today, that number of families is headed in the right direction. There, as of today, there's 298 folks that are in hotels. Those are families with about 845 family members. So that's a pretty big deal. We want that. We want to keep finding housing solutions for those folks as quickly as we can so we can get them back in their communities and get their kids back and close to their schools. Let me talk just for a second. Those are emergency management programs. And so the other agency that's a sister agency that was newly created last October was North Carolina Office of Recovery and Resiliency. The primary focus of the administration of NCOR is what we call it. Got to have an acronym. Is making sure that we are managing our community development block grant for disaster recovery grants. And I can tell you that we're speeding up on that. We've had to learn how to do it. We've got some good folks in place now. We're very excited. And so we are filling new positions. We were able to hire the former chief operating officer from HUD. Her name's Laura Hogshead. I can tell you she's a tremendous person. Right, she would be here today, but she's actually going through some training with HUD for some technical assistance. So we're focusing on that to try to get it going very quickly. We've received close to 3,000 applications for CDBG-DR, and we've awarded a little bit over $9 million. A couple of other programs that I'd like to mention. Towards the end of the year last year, the General Assembly created a couple of programs that allowed communities that had cash flow issues to either apply for a grant or a loan. And so I just want you to know that those are out there. We did a notice of funding availability, and we're starting to get some of those in. Communities like Pollocksville and others are sending in their applications. So if you know of a community that's got low capacity, has cash flow issues, make sure you let them know that they can apply for funding. So subject to your question, sir. Yes.
Mike will be here after the formal part of the meeting. If those of you who have questions of him want to meet with him afterward, one of the things that we've been in all of your counties, and I'm going to keep coming back to those counties because I know that when the cameras and the reporters move away, the recovery effort still goes on. And one thing that has been glaring to me is that those who can least afford it have gotten hit the hardest. And this hurricane has put a magnifying glass on challenges that existed even before it got here, challenges of affordable housing and local rural counties being able to afford to build public schools, health, community health issues, people who are struggling to meet the basics of everyday life. What we want to try to do is take lessons learned from this hurricane and not only recover from it, but also use those lessons learned to help us address those challenges. My vision for North Carolina is this. I want a North Carolina where people are better educated, where they're healthier, where they have more money in their pockets, and they have opportunities to live more abundant and purposeful lives. That is my mission for our state. We want to work with you, those of you who are working so hard at this, to make sure that we achieve that, and hurricane recovery is vital. There are a lot of various programs that are going on that we're working to try to pull together and making sure they work together in concert. Having gone out and talked to local officials, we heard the problem. We heard you that some of you just didn't have the bank balances to be able to contract for services like trash pickup and other issues. Even though you knew you were going to get reimbursed from FEMA, you weren't allowed to let the contracts until you had the money in the bank. And that's where the idea for this revolving loan fund came from. And so if you've got issues with that, you can talk with Mike afterward. And Mike, thank you for your leadership in this effort. Having grown up in eastern North Carolina, I've heard a lot about the rural-urban divide. But I know personally of the positive aspects of living, raising a family, having your business in rural North Carolina. That sense of community, that sense of faith, that sense of people depending on each other, that lower cost of living, more space, friendlier people, strong workforce, all are positive aspects of rural North Carolina. We also know that local governments in particularly small rural areas struggle to have the staff necessary to go beyond keeping the trains on the track, reaching out to state and federal agencies and making sure that efforts are coordinated to help them. And sometimes to small rural counties, state government can seem so far away and so much of a problem and more of a burden instead of a help. We wanted to change that. We wanted to bring state government in to help with communication. We wanted to bring state government in to help local governments and partner with them to meet these challenges and take advantage of opportunities. So our idea of Hometown Strong has become a reality. It's not a new agency. It's not a new bureaucracy. It is an action team that is sent from the governor's office to bring state government to these rural counties to help them get to know local government officials and to help them reach positive results. And we have the Hometown Strong team with us today, Pryor Gibson and Mary Penny Kelly, and I wanted to give them a few minutes to tell you a little bit about this great idea that's going to spread like wildfire all over North Carolina. Pryor?
Thank you, Governor. And he only gave us 5 to 7 minutes, so we can't tell you all the great things that we're seeing when we're in rural North Carolina. But let me start by saying this. What an honor it is to be in Eastern North Carolina in front of this group. You guys live in the best place, in the best state, in the best country in the world, and we are so honored to spend that day or two with you when we visit your county. And by the way, if we haven't been to your county, we're coming. Aren't we, Linda? We're coming. And when we come, we're going to take some of your time, but I promise you we'll take what you give us and we'll turn it into something that's more valuable, not just for you locally, but for those of us at the state level too. But I have to tell you, before we start telling you a little bit about Hometown Strong, you got to understand, it's a little unnerving to have the whole cabinet back behind you up on the elevated stage when you know that every state agency in the state is sitting right here in the room, coming to your community so that they can hear what you need from state government. And that, Governor, like you alluded to, is exactly what Hometown Strong is trying to do. We call up your professional staff, your town manager or your clerk or your county manager or your social services director, and we have a series of conversations, sometimes lasting a week or two. We find out what's important to you as an elected or what's important to your community. We match that up with what we have as assets on the state level with every one of these agencies. We have those conversations. We plan about 3 or 4 weeks out, and then we bring the whole state agency team, sometimes numbering as many as 24 or 25, depending on what the issues are. And we sit down in your community, and we just don't show up like we're from Raleigh, from state government. We're here to help. We show up to listen. We take a lot of notes. Sometimes we ask questions that locally don't make any sense, but that's because we're from state government. But by the time we leave, we have a whole lot better understanding about what affects you personally and locally than any state agency could have possibly had by sitting up in Raleigh and exchanging big brown envelopes back and forth. And I will tell you, for the 11 communities we spent the couple days in, not only have the local governments benefited from state government coming to their town and seeing what these issues are, but folks, the state government folks that come down there, the agency heads, they're leaving your community better state employees, better public servants, and as a partner for your local government. I've been in and out of public service for almost 40 years now, and it's doing amazing things for amazing communities. And like one of the county managers asked when we showed up and said, well, we're here to do your agenda and to try to help you add value to what you're doing, or get out of the way, whichever will help you the most. And the county manager looked at us and said, "What took you so long?" So we're honored to be invited to your communities. We're honored to participate. And we're not going to let a storm keep Eastern North Carolina down. We're looking to come back better, faster, stronger than before. Mayor Penny.
Yeah, I'll just echo what Pryor said. I think the most valuable thing we have is the connections we make when we visit. You know, sitting down face-to-face with you all and, you know, the people and your leaders in your community, that inspires us. And I think it even bringing it together and just talking about things and some of the troubles you have, but some of the successes and momentum that the rural communities really dig deep, they figure out how to get it done, and they start making it happen. And so state government can really learn from that. And we bring those lessons home. And there's been several improvements in our agencies just from them hearing those types of stories and thinking about hearing the challenges that, the rural communities are facing and thinking how to come back to the resources we have at the state level and deploy those in a better fashion or more timely or more seamless. Some of the ones that I'm really excited about are, and I didn't see it coming, but 2020 hindsight, it makes perfect sense, is libraries. And that fits in with Secretary Hamilton's Department of Natural and Cultural Resources. They own the state library systems, but as you know, every library is a local librarian there. There's a local person there. It's a hub of the community. It's where people gather. And looking at that and partnering with another department of information technology to think about how can we start getting broadband access out into these areas that don't have it or can't afford it or don't have the speeds. And so coming up, and that's one of the things we took back with us and really thought through and said, how can we tackle this? And I think coming up with checkout Wi-Fi hotspots people can take home, use for a semester, particularly focusing on the homework gap where our students don't have access at home. That was a significant thing that kept coming up over and over and over again. So that's one of the issues we're trying to tackle. But it was completely inspired by the conversations we had at the community level and hearing those heartfelt stories about their kids not being able to do it. I think in Madison County it was where one of the county officials that was in charge of trying to get broadband further into the county was asked, well, why don't the students just use the free Wi-Fi at McDonald's? And she said, first, one, shame on you. That we got to do better for our students. That is not the answer. And two, what McDonald's? You know, this is in a mountainous area. They didn't even have a single McDonald's in the county. So I thought that was really drove that point home, and we took that back and worked on it. Another one that's come up is, and this focuses a lot on probably storm as you're thinking about how do you rebuild a community, but a lot of small towns don't have a resilient downtown anymore, and they want to bring back their downtown, make it more walkable, make it more shoppable, make it a place where people want to be. And so we have a great state government program that partners with a federal program called Main Street Communities, but there are a lot of small towns that can't afford to have a planner dedicated to Main Street, can't afford to be fully into the program. So taking that back and working with the Department of Commerce and thinking about a program called Downtown Strong that would help those smallest communities have some technical assistance and resources dedicated to doing the planning and helping getting those downtowns thriving again. Those are the things that get me up every morning, get me excited, gets Pryor out on the road in his truck that has NC Rural on the back, and keep driving. So thank you for inspiring us. Thank you for making my job one of the best ones in state government.
With your permission, Governor, I just want to end it with this. We know, and we have a lot of legislators here, there's no such thing as writing a check big enough to solve all our problems. That's just not the way to solve some of the issues we're facing. But if we work together, check our guns at the door, state and local government having real conversation and listening to each other, we may not always find a good answer, but we can certainly find the best answer. And that's what we're discovering. When Raleigh comes to your town or to your county and we spend enough time to actually learn, Mayor Bender, I saw you here, what it's like on Barris Street right now in downtown Pollocksville, when they see that, it kind of brings it home. And maybe together, maybe the sum is more than just the parts.
I've been to a number of these Hometown Strong meetings. It is amazing when you have every cabinet agency in one room And either the secretary, many of the secretaries that you see here are there, or either one of their senior staff are all in the room with the county commissioners, with the mayors of the towns, with the city councils, with business leaders, community activists. They're all in one room. And it's an amazing dynamic that occurs with communication, with lights going off in people's eyes, seeing firsthand what the challenges are and what the solutions can be. So thank you guys for what you're doing, and Hometown Strong coming to a county near you. We're hoping that we can continue that effort. So we're now going to hear from each one of the cabinet agencies. First, let me just say that Senator Harper Peterson from Wilmington is here. And we also have Janet Bradbury, who is the representative from United States Senator Richard Burr's office. But I've given these cabinet secretaries instructions for 3 minutes each. And the reason for that is we want to get out there and meet with you and hear from you directly. But first, let me introduce the chief of staff to the governor's office, Christy Jones, who is on my left. She was also chief of staff for the Department of Justice when I served as attorney general. So Christy and I have been doing this for a long time. And would you like to recognize some of the governor's staff who's here, Christy?
Sure. Good afternoon, everyone. We brought a full team today. I want to introduce, so when you have some hard questions, you can take them directly to them. First is Stephen Bryant, who's our Deputy Chief of Staff. Noel Talley, if you all will raise your hand.
Yeah, Stephen's back there in the back.
Yeah. Noel Talley is our Acting Communications Director. Jordan Wichard in the back is our Director of Intergovernmental Affairs. You all know our celebrity down here, Mary Jo Alco, who is the Eastern North Carolina Field. Somebody wants to clap for her. Yeah, we'll clap for her. Lee Lilly is our director of our legislative affairs. Lee's in the back. His deputy is with him. Justin Clayton is back there as well. We have from our communications team, Jamal Little, Paul Barker, and Caitlin Grimes. They're back there as well. Eric Wilson, his a special assistant. And I also saw from other agencies, some other deputy secretaries, Pam Cashwell. I think I saw Beth Gargan from Commerce, Jill Lucas from OSHR. NCR has a whole team down here, and we thank all of them, and I think she's going to talk about and thank the folks from Tryon Palace, and I think I saw Catherine Parker from Hometown Strong. So there's a bunch of us here to answer questions and assist you today. Look forward to talking to you.
I've appointed by far the most diverse cabinet in the history of our state. I believe strongly that state government should look like the people that it serves and protects. But I'm also proud that I believe this is the best. It's an amazing array of people, some who've done a lot of government service, some people who have never done government service but have come in from the private sector, and it is a good combination of quality people who have stepped up, who could be doing other things and making more money, but they've decided to serve their state, and I'm very proud of them. So I'm going to go in the order of my agenda and not of their position on the stage, but we're going to start off with Michelle Sanders, who is the Secretary of Administration. Michelle?
Thank you, Governor.
Can you pull that mic as close as you can to you so they can hear you?
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm a daughter of Eastern North Carolina, so I'm from the big town of Belhaven in Beaufort County. I can tell some of you know where that is when you smile and I say a big town. So indeed, I know firsthand the impact and of the devastation of a hurricane, and especially the ones that we most recently had, being that I grew up in a town that's below sea level and saw the rise in water on television. So I'm going to hit on a few points for the Department of Administration. The first one is our disaster preparation and recovery. Secondly, I'd like to share with you a couple of programmatic services that we provide to the state and specifically to this eastern area. And then thirdly, I'd like to take an opportunity to remind all of you of Census 2020, which is coming very soon. So within the Department of Administration, we have government operations, and we're also responsible for advocacy services. And thank you to Governor Cooper's proactive leadership. We were able to prepare and help local communities prepare for the devastation of the hurricanes. In particular, our state surplus area provided to the communities equipment, trucks for water. We also provided things from raincoats to blankets, cover, forklifts, just a number of items in preparation for our hurricanes that were about to approach us. And we've continued to provide support to local communities with our Council for Women, as well as our HUB programs. Specifically, speaking of HUB, during the storm and before, the HUB, which is Historically Underutilized Businesses, is a group that was able to make connections with our HUB vendors and make them aware of opportunities that would be coming about either as we prepared for the storm or as we continue to rebuild and recover from the storm. Ensuring the growth of a diverse and inclusive economy is one of Governor Cooper's priorities, and we are diligently working on that as an administration to bring the diversity and inclusion to the forefront of our communities. Just as a reminder, we have 183,000 minority-owned businesses, and those businesses employ 261,000 jobs, employees, and that actually brings about $6.1 billion to our state in sales each year. So indeed, we can see the impact that our HUB vendors and HUB businesses have. Many of you have contracted and continue to do so as we recover in eastern North Carolina. And whether that's during disaster time or whether that's without a disaster, we appreciate your reach out to HUB vendors to help our economy grow, to help entrepreneurs, and to help each and every resident in North Carolina lift up, because when one person does well, I believe as a community, others do well. When one does not do well, we can see the devastation, how that ripples through our community. So indeed, it's important. The outreach that has been done by HUB, we've had outreach that covers 65 counties up to this year. And 20 of those counties included eastern North Carolina. So that actually paid off as a benefit during this unfortunate devastation. Now, most of the HUB contracts go to small minority-owned businesses that are owned by females. And that is good to see, and that also reminds us of the economic impact that women have in North Carolina and beyond. In saying that, one of our programmatic groups, which is the Council for Women, partnered last year with the Institute on Women's Policy Research. And from that research, what we found was that this research was done. There's a report, and it actually gives county-by-county data specifically for the county. North Carolina as a whole, about 10 years ago, received a D for the status. During this last report on equity and earnings, North Carolina received a C. Here in Craven County, the average difference between men and women's salaries is about $9,000. So for men who are making $46,000, the women are making that $37,000. And I'm sure we all would love to see equity in that for some of the same jobs. But unfortunately, the data that was done tells us that women in Craven County and beyond will not reach pay equity until 2060. And I'd say that's way too long, wouldn't you? Absolutely. Yes, absolutely is right. So although this pay equity is there and the earnings are there, we continue to work. We have continued to see progress of women in North Carolina, but we all are working diligently to identify ways that we can close the gap, identify ways that our daughters and granddaughters and others will not have to experience the equity in that. And so as we see the businesses that are HUB businesses and firms continue to thrive, majority of contracts continuing to go to women, we indeed have more work to do. And I'm very proud to say that Governor Cooper has been one of our strongest advocates for diversity and inclusion. In December, through an executive order, he put forth an order to support women workers by extending non-discrimination protections and workplace accommodations for pregnant workers. And so I like to applaud him for his leadership, his courage, and his commitment to ensure that all North Carolinians have an equal place, whether it's at the workplace, in our communities, or where that is. And this is not only a women's issue. This is a community issue. This is an economic issue. And this is a North Carolina issue that we need to continue to work to solve together. Today, while here in Newbern, I visited a sexual assault standalone operation called Promise Place. And at Promise Place, it reminded me of not only the devastating hardships that have occurred during our storms, but it reminds me of the devastation and the disparities that occur across North Carolina within our communities. So Council for Women has actually provided grant support. We also provided support to Promise Place prior to the storm to help identify ways to have uninterrupted services for the men and women there. And as you know and may know, during disasters and during devastation, there's an increase in domestic violence and sexual assault crimes. And Promise Place is no different. They shared with us today about the increase in services that they had to offer. The rewarding thing about the work is that they have the opportunity to touch people directly in their community because, unlike some sexual assault facilities, they're based in the community and help those in the underserved area. And so our goal within Council for Women is that we can provide access to every citizen in North Carolina so that they have access within at least 30 miles from where they are located. And we're beginning to do that by having interactive maps and location finders on our website so that anyone can find the closest location to them today. Today I also had the chance to be a part of a ribbon cutting at Promise Place. Promise Place is a place that truly has an umbrella of services, a full continuum. Today, they had a ribbon cutting for their food pantry, where they will be providing food to their clients, victims and survivors, as well as the nearby community. And they're doing that in partnership with the food bank and with the Department of Agriculture. So we can see where our breadth of reach has touched not only the communities, but the hearts and souls of many. And most importantly, it offers hope, and it heals people who have been devastated by these crimes. So within the Department of Administration, we continue to work and manage our government operations, enable our agency, as well as my colleagues, to do the work that they are doing for our residents, and also be advocates for the underserved and the underprivileged. And the unfortunate event of this hurricane and disaster gave us a great opportunity to do just that. As a daughter of Eastern North Carolina, my office, of course, is in Raleigh, but my heart was and remains in Eastern North Carolina. Now, before closing out, I'd like to have a final note to mention Census 2020. The governor has appointed a complete count commission for Census 2020. I am the chairperson of that commission, and our goal is to make everyone in North Carolina count. Every citizen, every resident in North Carolina count. And the reason that is important is because many billions of dollars are distributed, and we want that distribution in North Carolina to be a public funding of equity across our communities and across our state, across the nation, and we want North Carolina to count. So it is very important, even more important, I'd say, now than ever, to ensure that you participate in the Census 2020 as well as others. So please help us in spreading the word of the importance. It's important for healthcare, public funding, education, your local communities, roads, highways. There's a vast number. And even from the census, it is likely that North Carolina, from our count, and hopefully it will be a complete count, could also gain another congressional seat. And that matters because that's a voice for North Carolinians. North Carolina is the top in the top 10 in population and growth and has the fourth largest numeric gain in population from 2010 to 2018. So indeed, we can have a big voice in the census 2020, and we need to, not only because of the funding, but because we care about the future state and the current state of our residents, our families, and our communities. To find out more info, please go to census.nc.gov. There are also jobs there that they are recruiting for. And again, thank you for your hospitality today, and it is a pleasure to serve you as well as other residents in North Carolina. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary Sanders. Secretary Tony Copeland from the Department of Commerce.
Thank you, Governor.
Get that microphone a little bit closer to you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
My wife says she never has a problem hearing me. I want to say that January 12th, 2 years ago, the governor announced that I was going to be, and I was sworn in as Secretary of Commerce. One of the challenges he directed me was to work with members of the General Assembly on both sides of the aisle to bring stability back to economic development. To that end, I'd say he's achieved that. The combined number of jobs last year and this year is a little over 40,000 jobs that have been announced by the Department of Commerce. We're back to where we were in 2006. We're also at full employment today. We're under 4% unemployment, which basically means we're at full employment, which presents a whole nother bunch of challenges for us. Some of that is to change our workforce programs and where we're going with that. And we're working with Pryor to talk about Hometown Strong. But in the past, our workforce has been basically focused on rapid response and plant closures. Today, we've got to create a whole new generation of workers to create the future. And that's what we're doing. I'll give you one example of what we're doing in eastern North Carolina up in the Nash Edgecombe, which we hope to replicate all over the state. You know, we located one of the largest tire manufacturers in the world from Weihai, China, there in the last year. Close to $1 billion investment, 600 jobs, 6 million tires a year they'll be producing. You know, right now we're showing that they may need up to 2,500 employees between some of the other retirements in the next 2 years. We're bringing in eight community colleges in eight counties, and we're putting a new curriculum in to train those workers. And this is going to fit into where I was this morning here. I was at Bosch here this morning, which actually received the Employer of the Year last year, named by the governor and the Department of Commerce. They have one of the exemplary apprentice programs, I'd say, in the world, much of it modeled after the German model. But they're facing also severe worker shortages, especially in entry-level manufacturing. We hope to replicate that and work with the community colleges, the apprentice programs, both registered and unregistered programs, to fill the workers that we need. You know, we talk about recruitment for industry, and of course we're going to do that. But part of the focus of Department of Commerce and what we've got to do now is be prepared and get counties prepared for industry. You know, we have 34 counties losing population today, even in spite of we've got 20 counties that are busting at the seams with finding new companies and new employment. So part of that, we've got to work, the Department of Commerce is to work through, whether it's Main Street or whether it's Hometown Strong, to get these communities prepared. And that would be a trained workforce and infrastructure. Without those two things, we will not have a successful workforce, and you will not be able to recruit, I use the word recruit, but you won't be prepared for the industries of the future. We want to continue to work with you. We're going to redeploy our assets that way. And I want to say, one of the things we're doing, too, with the employment, which used to be the Employment Security Commission, We have 27,000 people that are receiving disaster unemployment right now in the 36 counties that were affected by the hurricane. We're going to continue to work with them and to continue to work our way out of this as we move forward.
Thank you, Secretary Copeland, who also grew up in eastern North Carolina, by the way.
For Clemens County, the town of Hartford.
Indeed. Now for the Secretary of the Department of Environmental Quality, Michael Regan.
Thank you, Governor. Good afternoon. You know, the city of New Bern and cities like my hometown of Goldsboro, North Carolina, caught the worst of Hurricane Florence. But I'd like to say that we can report today that all public water systems impacted by the hurricanes are back operational. And we're continuing to work with all of our local leaders to improve their performance and be better prepared for the next storm that we know is coming. This morning, I participated in a roundtable at the Neuse Regional Water and Sewer Authority in LaGrange, North Carolina, to discuss how we can update and fund a more resilient system for their water infrastructure. In that effort, our department just awarded the city of Kinston with an asset inventory and asset grant to help future fund their work as well. This afternoon, I'm visiting in the town of Pollocksville, where residents were displaced for weeks. Mayor Jay Bender of Pollocksville is in the room with us today, and he and I this afternoon will be discussing their wastewater systems and ways to be assistance to be of assistance to his community as they recover from the worst one of the worst natural disasters in their history. In response to Governor Cooper's request of the U.S. Department of Commerce to issue a federal disaster declaration for recreational and commercial fisheries, we're anxious to continue working with our federal agencies once the federal shutdown ends. But in the meanwhile, with the state of North Carolina appropriating $11.6 million to provide aid to our commercial fishing industry, our Division of Marine Fisheries has contacted all of the individuals who are eligible under the Commercial Fishing Assistance Program. As of January 8th, almost 50% of those eligible have responded, and we work diligently to ensure that every family applies and that the checks are delivered to account for some of the lost income from September through November when the hurricane hit them the hardest. DEQ is also spearheading recovery along the North Carolina coastline, where several counties received significant shoreline damage. Soon, over $18 million will be distributed for the storm damage mitigation. And our Division of Coastal Management has already awarded grants to address erosion in Beaufort County and assess the vulnerability in the town of Duck as well. And finally, to continue to support the governor's call to rebuild smarter and stronger as we face more intense storms, on February 19th, the second meeting of the Climate Change Interagency Council will take place in Elizabeth City, North Carolina. So we look forward to working with each and every one of you as we rebuild North Carolina. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary Regan. Our Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services is attending a funeral today of one of her employees, but our Deputy Secretary is here with us, Susan Perry Manning. Deputy Secretary Manning.
Thank you, Governor. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm delighted to be with you all and do want to send greetings and apologies from Secretary Cohen, who is at a funeral of one of our employees who died very tragically and suddenly at the end of last week. So she apologizes. She really enjoys coming out to see you and is sorry she can't be with you today. I want to touch just briefly on five things in my updates today. First of all, I do want to provide you all with some updates from the Hurricane Florence recovery efforts the department has undertaken in partnership with many of you. And also want to touch briefly on the department's continued top three priorities, which is fighting the opioid crisis, early childhood, and Medicaid transformation. And then finally, I'll just give you a very quick update on where we are with the federal shutdown's impact on some of our key social services programs. I want to start with talking about some of the highlights from Hurricane Florence recovery, but I have to start by saying this. I am humbled to be with you all today. I spent many hours at State EOC and spent a lot of time on the phones and text messaging with your departments of social services directors, setting up shelters and working every day to meet the needs of citizens and many of you. And it was humbling to see the incredible incredible level of strength and commitment and resilience from you all in the face of the storm. I was talking and meeting and greeting some folks before I got up here, and I met Tammy, who is the public information officer from Pender County, who very matter-of-factly told me that she had lost both her office and her home, but spent most of her days at EOC because it was just stuff and the work had to continue. So humbled and honored to be with you all today. Because of your work and the works mainly of the county departments of social services, more than 720,000 people received help buying food after the storm through the Disaster SNAP Assistance Program. That is the most that have ever been served, and it was amazing work that you all did. The department also worked with you all to set up 5-bed mobile emergency department in Kingston after, which supported 321 patients who were cut off by flooding. We were also able to secure more than $8.5 million in federal and state funds to support behavioral health needs, and we know there's a lot more work to do in that area. The department also launched Back at Home NC, which I hope many of you have heard of, that's still diligently working to help folks who are in shelters find more permanent, stable housing. And so far, we have served 109 families through that program and are continuing our efforts diligently. I'd like to speak a little bit about fighting the opioid crisis. I think we all know that the opioid crisis is continuing to ravage many North Carolina communities, and we're working hard with you all to attack the program. In 2017, there were 706 unintentional opioid overdose deaths and more than 2,200 opioid-related visits to emergency departments in the Eastern Health District alone. We're focusing efforts on expanding access to treatment and recovery services, particularly by supporting medication-assisted treatment programs and by increasing the number of peer support specialists. We do a lot of work down here in Eastern North Carolina and are supporting 4 treatment programs that particularly focus on pregnant and parenting women. Many of you are probably familiar with Cambridge Place, Grace Court, Kelly House, and the Eastern Region Women and Infants Project, all doing tremendous work there. We also continue to work with communities to distribute naloxone across the state, and there were over 2,100 naloxone reversals here in Eastern North Carolina alone in 2017. We still have a lot of work to do to address the opioid crisis and want to work with you on it. We know that access to healthcare is a big part of the solution, and I'm going to talk more about that in a minute. Then I want to touch on early childhood, one of my favorite areas. DHHS, the department, has a unique reach in the state in terms of early childhood. We pay for half of the births in the state through our Medicaid program and serve hundreds of thousands of young children each year through food assistance, through child care, NC Pre-K program, and our child welfare services. Our pre-K program alone serves almost 10,000 children here in Eastern North Carolina, and thanks to the governor's leadership and the General Assembly, we added almost 300 new slots last year. We provide child care subsidies for more than 13,000 working families in Eastern North Carolina, and we have recently released a draft early childhood action plan, which I hope many of you had a chance to look at. We've gotten incredible stakeholder feedback from across the state and are really looking to set measurable targets to improve outcomes for our state's young children, which we'll be launching in February. On Medicaid transformation, as you all know, the Medicaid program plays a vital role in the lives of many North Carolina families. More than 580,000 residents in Eastern North Carolina receive their health services through Medicaid. And as you also all know, we are transitioning now from a state-run Medicaid program to a managed care administered program in the next couple of years. And there's several upcoming milestones to tell you about. First, we recently received a federal approval of our 1115 waiver, which is allowing us to implement some very innovative, groundbreaking pilots that will allow us to use Medicaid dollars to pay for services such as housing and transportation and interpersonal violence services. In November, we kicked off the design process for our planned behavioral health integration, so that people's physical and mental health needs can be addressed together. And then this February, we'll be awarding contracts to the prepaid health plans who will administer managed care. And in July of next year, we'll start open enrollment under the new system. I do want to briefly touch, as I mentioned earlier, on how important it is for us to find a North Carolina solution that works for our state to expand Medicaid. We're working closely with members of the General Assembly and thank the governor for his leadership, and we look to find a solution that can work for the people of our state. We know that 18% of rural North Carolinians lack health insurance, and that failing to close the coverage gap not only means that folks won't get health care, but it also means that Craven County alone, for example, is missing out on over $92 million in business activity and $500,000 in tax revenue. If we close the coverage gap in North Carolina, we'll expand health care to over 500,000 North Carolinians, and we know that so much of that work will help us address the opioid crisis and other things like our state's very high infant mortality rate, which, as you know, hits North Carolina particularly hard. States that have expanded Medicaid have seen a reversal in their infant mortality rates compared to increases in non-Medicaid expansion states. So I'll close there and just stay briefly on the federal shutdown, just so everyone's aware. We do have sufficient funds through February to pay our SNAP food stamp benefits, WIC, and our TANF funds, which support many county child welfare employees, and NC Pre-K, among other things. After February, the future is clearly uncertain. And just to give you an example, the SNAP benefits alone provide food to more than 450 people in eastern North Carolina. So we certainly hope that we'll see a change before March comes, because we will continue to work closely with counties and with our federal partners and keep a close eye on the federal shutdown. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. We want a great workforce and great state employees, and we have with us today the director of our Department of Human Services, Barbara Gibson. Barbara?
Thank you, Governor. Hello, everybody. Nice to see all of you out there. I had a wonderful day so far. Before looking out that beautiful window and the water and the bright sunny skies, I went to the Early College East High School in Havelock, and it was certainly an example of what Secretary Copeland was talking about, preparing our workforce for the future. They were talking about the small class sizes, the STEM-focused curriculum, and the partnerships they had with Craven Community College, NC State University, and Cherry Point Marine Air Station. And the students there were so energized. The staff was so dedicated. It was just such a great way to see how people are learning and we are moving forward. And I couldn't help to think, this is exactly what we're talking about with NC Job Ready and preparing our workforce. I couldn't help, the principal asked me to talk about state government careers, so I got a little chance to recruit. But for those of you that are parents or grandparents, have no fear. I told everybody that we have state jobs throughout all 100 counties. About 15% of them are in this area. And made sure, like, some of them were aspiring to be engineers, that we have engineers, the Department of Transportation, all over the state. So hopefully we will someday have those students be some of our state employees. I did get a chance to meet some of the people, like many of you, that suffered from the hurricane personally, and I thought it was really a good reminder of how resilient North Carolina residents are, because some of those students were still, they were traveling quite a way, some of them here from New Bern, in to continue their education, and they were totally happy to do it. They were so thrilled to be there. So it really also kind of spoke to me the sense of community that they had in that small school, that they all came together, supported each other, and that it was really important, just like we support each other in many of the different things that we do to build the resiliency that I saw there. Just like the supporting each other at that school, the state has taken many steps to help the affected employees that are in all the areas, and especially here, to continue to work while they were recovering from the effects of the storm. As soon as the storm happened, what my staff did was start daily phone calls with the HR people and all these agencies. So the employees that are around North Carolina, and especially in areas like yours where it was really hard hit, is come together and talk about on a daily basis what was happening with our workforce, who could not get to work, what was their situation. And what we immediately found out was that we had to make some temporary exceptions. So immediately we expanded the adverse weather leave options so that people that had problems safely getting to and from work would have a little more flexibility. We also authorized some special management-approved leave because we had a number of employees who their living situations were not safe, as many of you encountered, and maybe needed time off to address the loss of or significant property damage. So we did that real quickly. And over 3,000 employees in this area alone between September 13th and December 31st demonstrated how essential it was to provide that flexibility because they used those hours. We also provided some additional community service leave to all state employees, which made it easier for them to volunteer in their communities. Governor, I'm proud to say that we had 1,200 state employees in eastern and southeastern North Carolina volunteer more than 15,700 hours of service. So when you ask them to be neighbor helping neighbor, I think our state employees got out there and really utilized that benefit. Hopefully that was helpful. Additionally, we recruited and hired dozens of temporary workers through our temporary solutions to help the communities clear storm debris. And I know that the staff at Temp Solutions came in and made sure that they came in, I think, 6 o'clock the day that the storm was coming in, and until the electricity went out, they worked real hard to make sure that the temporaries all around the state were able to get their paychecks. As we know, some of them were the people that were hardest hit. Additionally, as far as the partners that we have in local government, we went ahead, the governor requested that if there was anything that we could do to help across the state, to please look at that. And so one of the things that we found was helpful in several areas was we expanded our employee assistance program contract to allow local governments to use that for crisis counseling or online EAP assistance and that sort of thing. So we did what we hope was helpful in the communities, and what any good employer does is not only help right there when you have the problem, but something that will hopefully be helpful going into the future. Now I'll shift gears and talk a little bit about the state workforce in Craven and nearby counties. Currently, the state has more than 8,700 permanent employees in 23 agencies in this area. Plus, we have nearly 150 temporary workers that are assigned to 5 different agencies. We have approximately 94 jobs that are currently posted in the region and anticipate that we will be able to fill them because we have a diverse and talented pool here in this area. Plus, it's a very nice place to live. It's beautiful. We have, I guess in this area, I think I said earlier, we have about 15% of the state's total workforce, which total is around 60,000 employees. The primary employers across the region are primarily in the Departments of Health and Human Service, Public Safety, and Transportation, as well as the Judicial Branch. And we continuously recruit for the entry level and other positions here and across the state. But when I was looking through some of the statistics, I noticed that some of the areas we see we have some really long-term employees. And one place was at the Caswell Center in Lenoir County, for example. We have 27 healthcare supervisors that average 18 years of service, which is really great for continuity of care in those areas. Also at the O'Berry Center, we had a dozen human services program coordinators that averaged 20 years of service. So it's nice to see that the state employees in those really critical jobs are there and continue to provide those services. And in Craven County, we have about 759 workers that are employed primarily between the Department of Public Safety and Transportation. And, of course, I'd be remiss not to point out that we have this exceptional team of state employees here at the Tryon Palace. We're proud to serve all of them. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Gibson. We got a lot of information to give you guys, and we wanted to do time for meet and greet, so if you guys can pick up the pace just a little bit, that would be good. Our Department of Information Technology, Secretary Eric Boyette. Eric?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Governor. Secretary Penny and I were talking about we can count, so we will pick up the pace. One of the things I do, like, I think I do hold the record, though. I think I come from the smallest community and smallest town from the secretaries that you see today. I think coming from Kinley in Johnston County and as an eastern town, I think I will take that title home today. Our agency works very hard on a lot of different areas, but the three things I want to talk to you about today, we really had some effect in the counties that were suffered from Hurricane Florence and also from some cyber attacks recently. Obviously, you hear the Hometown Strong team talk about what we can do with some ideas around broadband. How do we close the homework gap? What do we do with our digital divide? There are areas that we're working on every day with our team. But we also work hard with the communities where if you have a cyber attack, how do we partner? What do we do? So we recently have worked with Onslow County. So there's areas that we have flexibility with contracts where we can help you. And it's something that's a little known fact that we're trying to get the word out to have more partnerships with the communities and the local administrations. So as we go through, you'll hear more of us in some meetings as we work throughout the state. We're looking forward to those meetings as well. When you talk about broadband, we have a $10 million grant that ends February 1st. It's called the GREAT Program. We're looking forward to the opportunities that are there. We're looking to see what's there. What are some of the small businesses that can produce great benefits to our small communities? And how do we help them? What do we do? How do we benefit from closing that last mile? So we're very excited about that. One of the areas that we helped Eastern North Carolina was we actually, in the Department of Information Technology, we housed the 911 board. I chair that board very proudly. We work with all of your local PSAPs, your public service answering points, during the storm. So we want to make sure our staff was working with each of your local 911 communicators and their managers to make sure none of the calls would go down. Anytime we were seeing deficiencies, we would reroute calls. We would help those communities, and we continue to do that throughout the storm with partnership with our public safety emergency management systems. We were very, very, very close to you and your communities. Very proud of that fact, very proud of our team. Also, we have a health information exchange. We work in partnership with our Health and Human Services agency. And we use that so when our citizens were displaced, we could actually move your records. So if you were displaced to another state, we had agreements so that when you saw a physician in another state, your records were electronically there. It just helps us help you, and that's what we're about. And anything else that we can do, we're always looking for opportunity, and you'll see our face more and more in the local communities on opportunities that are there. And, Governor, I'll turn my time over.
Thank you, Secretary Boyette. North Carolina is the most military-friendly state in the country. We know what the military means to the defense of our country and to the economy of North Carolina. I'll introduce our Secretary of Military and Veterans Affairs, Larry Hall. Secretary Hall.
Thank you, Governor, and good afternoon to everyone. I want to just talk a little bit about a veterans roundtable we had this morning in Trenton. And we had the American Legion, veterans of foreign wars, disabled American veterans, and all of those organizations talking about what the effect of the hurricane was on Eastern North Carolina. We know we have over 1 million uniformed military as well as veterans included, 800,000 in North Carolina. There's no question as the second largest industry sector generating $66 billion a year, how important the military is to North Carolina. And east of 95, the major drivers of economic development include our military installations. So we value that. The governor has said we must do more to involve them in the overall life of this state and economic development. We did that, but we know what happened as a result of the hurricane. At that Veterans Roundtable, we had folks from New Bern, from New Hanover County, from Onslow County, from Craven County, from Jones County, and Pitt County talking about the effects. We visited seven of the shelters immediately after the hurricane, specifically looking to assist veterans who may have special needs, everything from medication to counseling to family needs. We know and value Eastern North Carolina and what it means to this state. You know, the longstanding organizations of the American Legion and VFW have posts that are community assets. Organizations hold their events there. Families hold their family reunions there. High schools have their reunions there as well. Many meetings throughout the year held at these posts. They're an integral part of the fabric of our rural communities as well as Eastern North Carolina. And when you think about the fact that 305 American Legion posts in the state and 105 VFW posts, you understand how big that network and how much of that fabric it represents. So here in the East, 20 of the American Legion posts were damaged and are receiving funding to help rebuild so they can continue to be and return to being an integral part of the community. And so we are working with them to ensure they get national funding to build back these resources that the communities use. The revival of the post as well has been a critical issue for us in finding imaginative funding to assist them in reviving their post and, again, making them critical parts of the community. And so, finally, we do know that as a result of the shutdown, our Coast Guard, which is such a valued member of our community, have not been able to be paid. And we've joined in assisting the American Legion with over $1 million in funding to assist Coast Guard families, E5 and below, with a child to get $1,500 each. At this point, we already have 500 families in North Carolina who have applied for that assistance, and the funding is continuing. We've enlisted the Association of the United States Army, the American Legion, the Marine Corps League, and the VFW to assist in this effort to provide this funding until the government shutdown is completed, and we hope that you'll join in that as well. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Secretary Hall. We're grateful for the relationship with this between this community and Cherry Point. We're also grateful to this cultural treasure that is Tryon Palace right here in New Bern, and we're thankful for our arts, our culture, our parks, our natural resources across our state. And I'll introduce to you now the Secretary of Natural and Cultural Resources, Susie Hamilton.
Thank you, Governor. First, I'd like to acknowledge our staff here at Tryon Palace. Mr. McRae, if you would stand up, please, Bill McRae and his staff. So thank you very much for hosting us here today. Welcome here. This is our state's first colonial capital. Of the 21 historic sites managed by the Department of Natural and Cultural Resources, Tryon Palace is a living history attraction, an educational institution, and is one of our most visited sites. It's also its 60th year anniversary this year. Here in coastal North Carolina, we are proud to boast not only Tryon Palace, but seven other state historic sites, from Curie Beach in the south to Edenton in the north. History is big business in eastern North Carolina. The North Carolina coast is home to three aquariums in Jeanette's Pier, three maritime museums, eight state parks, the Outer Banks History Center, and the Office of Underwater Archaeology. Eastern North Carolina also has an outstanding arts community. The North Carolina Symphony hosts concert series in New Bern and Wilmington each year, and the North Carolina Arts Council supports the annual Kookaloras Film Festival in Wilmington. In addition, we have 12 A-plus schools in our eastern counties, including Oaks Road Elementary here in New Bern, which uses an arts-based curriculum to weave the arts throughout the learning experience. These schools have seen significant improvement in student achievement. Four new schools will be added to the A-plus school system of North Carolina this summer, which will bring the total number of A-plus schools across the state to 64. North Carolina beaches and waterways continue to be our state's most popular tourist attractions. We have 15 amazing state parks and recreation areas throughout eastern North Carolina that allow visitors to explore a variety of ecosystems, from the world's tallest sand dune at Jockey's Ridge to the historic Fort Fisher in Curry Beach. Our Parks and Recreation Trust Fund also provides grants to local governments for their park, trail, and greenway projects. Over the last 25 years, the fund has provided over 275 grants with a combined total of over $55 million to counties and municipalities in eastern North Carolina. To protect our natural and cultural resources, our Clean Water Management Trust Fund has funded 531 grants in eastern North Carolina for a total of over $431 million since 1996. Five grants for $5.1 million were made in 2018 alone. Clean water is an important economic driver and one that is especially important for water-based tourism in our region. In addition, for the last 3 years, the Museum of Natural Sciences have made grants to support local science museums. The program is helping these museums to serve citizens throughout the coastal plain, from the Sylvan Heights Bird Park in Scotland Neck to the Exploration Station in Lumberton. These grants currently go to 22 institutions, totaling more than $1.2 million in the region. I'd like to talk a bit about Hurricane Florence recovery, which has so greatly impacted eastern North Carolina, including so many DNCR sites. New Bern, like much of eastern North Carolina, suffered significant damage during Hurricane Florence last September, and Tryon Palace itself was closed for over 2 weeks due to the storm. The North Carolina History Center, where we are meeting today, saw unprecedented flooding with water from the Trent River reaching the doors. The building remained closed for repairs until October 20th. Nearly all of our coastal and eastern historic sites, museums, aquariums, and state parks also suffered damage during the storm. But thankfully, all have now recovered and reopened. However, since the storm, our state parks have seen a 7% decrease in visitation. Compared to the previous year, it's about 1.4 million less visitors. Visitation in the aquariums is down 4%. Historic sites visitation has decreased by 1%, and Tryon Palace itself has seen a decrease of 24%. This loss in visitation has resulted in significant lost revenues, bringing the total cost of storm preparation and repairs at these locations to about $4.6 million. I am so thankful to the staff who not only spent many long hours on storm recovery at our sites, but also spent time volunteering to help their neighbors. Looking ahead, we are eager to work with affected communities to be creative about recovery, redevelopment, and long-term resiliency. The Historic Preservation Tax Credit can be a key tool for helping downtown spring back to life. Clean Water Management Trust Fund can help preserve and restore floodplains. And the Parks and Recreation Trust Fund can provide funding to local governments to take these floodplains, turn them into parks, trails, and greenways. In these ways, we can help eastern North Carolina rebuild stronger. We look forward to rolling up our sleeves and getting to work. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Secretary Hamilton. We want North Carolina citizens to be safe and secure, and we have with us today the Secretary of the Department of Public Safety, Eric Hooks. Secretary Hooks.
Thank you, Governor. Good afternoon to you all. On behalf of all the Department of Public Safety, I wish you a good afternoon. We're 37,000 strong, and we work and live in communities all across North Carolina, particularly in eastern North Carolina, where you have seen and felt our presence. We are the Highway Patrol, the National Guard, Emergency Management. We're fortunate to hear from our Emergency Management Director earlier today, and so much more. And we impact the lives, and I'm very thankful to serve as your secretary. Governor, thank you for this ongoing opportunity. I'd like to first start off by acknowledging and give thanks for your support and your prayers for one of our troopers who was recently shot in the line of duty, Trooper Harrell. I'd like to specifically thank Sheriff Woodard out of Wilson County and those partnerships who followed up with that. Governor, I did see we did have another sheriff, Sheriff Paula Dance, is able to join us here from Pitt County, and so we thank her for being here as well. I find it an honorable service to serve in the Department of Public Safety, where we engage in life-giving and life-sustaining activities to serve with men and women who are extremely committed to public safety all around the state. We've suffered some other tragedies other than Trooper Harrell in eastern North Carolina. We lost Sergeant Slate from North Carolina National Guard, who was killed in the line of duty in action in Afghanistan. We'll also give honor to the service of Trooper Connor, who also died in line of duty right here in eastern North Carolina. In terms of hurricane recovery, it was an unprecedented event, and I'm going to talk a little bit about the response, an unprecedented event that required an unprecedented response. The damage from Hurricane Florence exceeded the combined damage of Hurricane Matthew and Hurricane Floyd. The entire DPS organization was involved in an organized and response under the leadership of this governor here and with the on-the-ground leadership of Mike Sprayberry. The emergency management, National Guard, State Highway Patrol, and all aspects of the department were involved in that response. We activated over 3,000 North Carolina National Guardsmen. Who nobly serve and live in your communities. There were more than 5,000 citizens saved and rescued from high storm waters. What you may not know is that there are other aspects of the department that were actively engaged in hurricane response as well. We had probation and parole officers that were managing and responding to facilities as well. Our adult corrections evacuated a number of jails as well as prison facilities throughout the entire event. I'm going to move through this quickly. Also, our communication staff, not only from the Department of Public Safety, but from all of the cabinet agencies, worked diligently with the media. And I'd also like to thank the media for the response that you gave and coverage of that, because that response and that cooperation, no doubt, saved lives across North Carolina. We also work very heavily in close concert with our federal partners, the Coast Guard, FEMA, Department of Homeland Security, and all of our Department of Defense partners to respond effectively to this storm. And so with that, Governor, I will turn over my time to get us back on track.
Thank you, sir. Secretary Hook's always efficient. We need someone to equitably collect our tax dollars, and I'll turn it over to our Secretary of Revenue, Ron Penny.
Thank you, Governor. Good morning. Good afternoon. As would be expected in January, our office is preparing to or finalizing our preparations for the collection of taxes this year. January 11th, we began collecting taxes from businesses. The IRS determines when we are able to open the tax season up for individuals. They have set that date for the 28th of January, so on that same day we will begin to collect and take in taxes for individual taxpayers. As a result of the shutdown, we recognize that many taxpayers who are federal employees within the state of North Carolina are having some difficulty, and so we will be working with all of them on an individual basis about their tax liabilities. All taxing authorities in recent years, and certainly as a result of last year's data breaches with Equifax and in the credit community, all of us are very conscious of fraud. And so this year you will see that we will be redoubling our efforts to ensure that fraudulent tax returns are not paid out. Last year, we protected North Carolina taxpayers to the tune of $30 million in fraudulent tax tax claims that we were able to catch. We have a strong presence here in eastern North Carolina. We recognize that, in fact, the storms have set many, have been devastating to the area. And so we extended the October deadline for many taxpayers to January 31st, and that extension will go on until the end of this month. Yesterday I was in Snow Hill participating in their Martin Luther King celebration and in a town hall. And this morning I spent the time in our Greenville office. We recently relocated our Greenville office, and we have other offices in eastern North Carolina, one in Rocky Mount, Wilmington, Elizabeth City, and Fayetteville. And we continue to have seminars all over the state, some 150 seminars dealing with individual and business taxes. And, in fact, last week we were in Martin County. If any of you are interested in learning of any of those seminars, just look on our website. And with that, Governor, I think I was the shortest on many levels cabinet member.
Thank you, Secretary Penny. We have a strong state budget and management staff that helps to administer the budget and busily working to put together my proposed budget for the General Assembly, and I'm going to recognize the budget director, Charlie Parruse. Charlie?
Good afternoon. As the governor mentioned, we are working feverishly to present a two-year budget to the General Assembly in early March. That budget recommendation will mirror very closely the CEO statement that you heard the governor mention at the outset. That is a healthier, safer, and better educated North Carolina where citizens have more money in their pockets and can live a full and abundant life. It means the emphasis will be in three areas: education and workforce, rural economic development, and health and public safety. In the area of education, the governor set 2 years ago a very bold goal for North Carolina to be a top 10 educated state by 2025, something we were working in bipartisan efforts with the General Assembly to ensure investments are put in the education system to improve student outcomes. In the public schools area, the governor will have a continued emphasis on enhancing safety and student success outcomes. This would include the hiring of additional school counselors, nurses, and psychologists to address mental health concerns, investments in textbooks and digital technology, and, of course, teacher compensation and professional development. In the rural economic development area, I'm proud you've heard a lot of things from the hometown strong folks and commerce that the governor's budget will be the most comprehensive rural economic development package I've seen in the 25 years I've been putting budgets together in state government. It will hopefully include funds to revitalize town centers that you heard about. It will have targeted investments for water, sewer, and transportation infrastructure, as well as additional investments for broadband connectivity to connect those that don't have it, as well as additional connectivity in our libraries. And finally, in the health and public safety area, there will be environmental investments to ensure clean water, coastal cleanup and resiliency efforts post-hurricane, and to ensure our tourism economy continues to thrive, as well as prison safety improvements. And so hopefully we're working. We spent a lot of time with the governor and his senior team this time of the year, sometimes 15 to 20 hours to put together the state budget, because that is a blueprint for the future of North Carolina and touches all 10.4 million residents. And finally, Governor, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that I am a proud 1988 graduate of Havelock High School. Once a Ram, always a Ram. Thank you.
You guys got to notice a trend in this cabinet where people were born, just so you know. We know how critical transportation issues are to a vibrant economy and to families and schools. I want to introduce to you the Secretary of the Department of Transportation, Jim Trogdon. Secretary Trogdon.
Yes, Yes, sir. Thank you, Governor. Good afternoon. Historically, NCDOT has averaged delivering out of our TIP about $1.6 to $1.7 billion a year. Last year, we broke that historic trend. We hit $3 billion. This year, we're on track for $4 billion. So, in short, I think NCDOT is moving like a tremendous machine, and I hope you see that across the state. But we couldn't do that. We had to do it, and we needed to do it at the same time we were responding to Hurricane Florence and Michael. If you don't know, we crested at about 1,500 roads closed in almost two-thirds of the state, most of it in southeastern North Carolina. We had 3,400 damaged sites, and that number is now down to 8 roads closed in 8 different counties spread in southeastern and some in the Piedmont. So thank you for your patience, but we know how important it is to get our facilities back open and operating. We were recognized this month by the National Center of Operational Excellence in its first ever Transportation System Management Award for our response in both planning and responding to Hurricane Florence. So the best in the nation, and we really appreciate that because it's not just what we do, it's how we work with first responders, highway patrol, emergency management, county emergency management, all of those, but then also communicating with the public as well as others like Google and Waze that helps get data out there so people know when to travel and where to travel. One of my top priorities, I've got 7 priorities. The first one and the only one I'm going to brief is how do we improve project delivery? We're doing that across the state. Evidence you'll see is a 6-month acceleration in the completion of US 70 from Pollocksville to Maysville. That will be complete this fall. The Greenville Southwest Bypass, that will also be completed this fall. Havelock Bypass, I'd hate to say we could have been in litigation for 2.5 to 3 more years. We settled that through mediation, so we will be awarding a contract in February, and we'll start construction this summer on the Havelock Bypass. We're working with the Treasurer to sell our first build NC bonds. We believe that will be extremely important in sustaining this momentum over the next 4 years. And projects scheduled for funding there will be US 17 Hampstead Bypass, the next phase, US 70 from New Bern to Havelock Bypass, upgrading that to interstate standards in and around James City all the way to the Havelock Bypass, NC 43 connector around New Bern, as well as 21 other projects in eastern North Carolina for a total of $375 million. In total, you'll see over the next 5 years in eastern North Carolina, 359 projects start construction, which we have not ever seen those kind of numbers. And it's not just here, it's across the state because of the improved delivery that we're doing. And I'm really proud of our efforts in working with USDOT and Federal Highway on our Infrastructure for Rebuilding America grant, which is, well, for the first time, we'll be widening I-95, upgrading more of US 70 to interstate standards, but then also preparing us for future technologies like autonomous and connected vehicles by putting fiber optic in the entire corridor of US 70 from I-95 to Morehead City and up the entire corridor from I-95. That will help us be better prepared for future high-tech vehicles using our roads, but it'll also allow us to partner with the private sector to offer that to areas that are underserved by broadband internet. And then the last, I was extremely proud to be at Cherry Point this morning where we reviewed the status of the Slocum Road interchange. That was one that we started the discussion with Marine Corps Installations East back in 2010. I'm very happy that it's under construction now. Contractor's doing a great job, and we anticipate that will be open as well by the end of this year, which is extremely important in supporting the growth and that employer there at Cherry Point Air Station and the Fleet Readiness Center. So in conclusion, I'd say, when I was interviewing for this job with the governor, he asked a question, what were my 4-year objectives would be for DOT? My response made him laugh, so I thought I'd share it with you, and that is, it's not a list of projects. It's in 4 years, I want the new state tree to be the orange barrel, the new state flower to be the orange work zone sign, and the new state motto to be to build rather than to study. Thank you.
I think I said you're hired right after that. So there you have a brief overview from all of these
cabinet secretaries. Each one of these departments have a lot to do with what's happening to people in Eastern North Carolina and to the people that you represent. We're going to now go out into the audience and talk to a lot of you individually. We want to make sure that your voices are heard. We are grateful to you. I wanted to take just 1 second to see if I was talking to my friend Bob Maddox before we came in here. I'd like for all of the former board members and current board members of the Tryon Palace Commission to stand or wave your hand if you're over on the side. Can you, former or current members of the Tryon Palace Commission, you guys stand up. Stand up. Let's give them a hand. And I also know that we have some Tryon Palace staff here. Can you guys stand up and raise your hands if staff here? Thank you guys for what you do too. We're grateful to have this opportunity to serve the state. We look forward to engaging with you. Thank you, legislators, for coming. We look forward to working with you in a bipartisan way to move this state forward. Thank you very much for coming. Good job.